Good morning, Chairman Singletary, Commissioners, and Director Yamashita. Scott Roush, Park Manager at Chatfield State Park, and here with Ken Kamar today to give you a little update on the Chatfield Reallocation Project, and more specifically, we're going to talk about identify the impacts that the project will have on Chatfield. Those impacts will include the fish and wildlife impacts, the recreational impacts, and the financial impacts. You may have heard, you may have seen just recently the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers released their final EIS at the beginning of August that supported the reallocation of the 20,600 acre feet of water from flood storage to water supply storage. And that equates to about 12-foot vertical increase at Chatfield. So what I'm going to do is go through some of the I'm going to go through a little brief way of way Chatfield is set up and the way we operate. We encompass about 3,700 acres of land. There's about 1,400 surface acres there. All the land is owned by the Army Corps of Engineers, and we have a 25-year lease with the Corps, and that current lease will end at 2028. We have a lot of visitors that come out to Chatfield. We have 1.6 million visitors annually on average, and we also take in about $2.2 million per year just at Chatfield. We do have a lot of facilities at Chatfield. We have over 48 buildings that we take care of. We have a couple entrances. So we have two boat ramps. We have the north boat ramp and the south boat ramp. We have 197 campsites, 139 picnic sites. And we have some special, some other activities that go on out there. We have two concessionaires. We have a livery concessionaire, and we have a marina concessionaire. We also have a balloon launch area. And we do have a dog off-leash area of 69 acres that I think a couple of commissioners here are very familiar with. Then we have a model airplane field, and we take care of 33 miles of paved roads and 26 miles of trails. In addition to that, at the park, we also take care of all the infrastructure that goes along with this. So we take care of all the water, the sewer, the electric, once it's inside the park. The way Chatfield's set up water-wise, we have the permanent pool is up to 5423, the elevation, and that's approximately the 16,928 acre feet. And then there's the operating pool that goes up to 5432, and that should be 28,868 acre feet on that, not 48,000. And that operating pool that is there, that is run by Denver Water, and that's where our fluctuation zone is inside there. Above that is the flood pool. Up to 5,500, and then up to the top of the dam on the other side. So Chatfield's designed to hold a lot of water, and I'm sure it's getting a little bit today. So then we're going to go into a little bit of how that operating pool works right now with Denver Water. There was an agreement with Denver Water, a 1979 agreement, and they were allowed to store water between 5423 and 5432. That area in there, it's set up as they also have that agreement on there that between the high use season from May 1st to August 31st, they do their best efforts to keep at least 20,000 acre feet of water in the reservoir. And that was put in there for recreational reasons. And then after that, it go down to 5423. In the 79 agreement, and to go below 5423, it has to be a severe and prolonged drought that is declared by the CWCB for them to be able to go below that level. And we have not ever hit that level where we had to go below it yet. We've been right at it, but we haven't been below. In the EIS, there was four different alternatives that were looked at. There was a no-action alternative with gravel pit construction and a new reservoir. And that was, at the time, was the Pinley Reservoir was to be considered. There was the other no-action was non-tributary groundwater and gravel pits. And then we had the reallocation of the 20,600 acre feet of storage. And there was also one for 7,700 acre feet of storage. The preferred alternative that was in the EIS is will be the 20,600 acre feet of storage. And that's what we'll be talking about with the impacts today. And so on the map, you can see on the red line that goes around the reservoir, that the current level of the reservoir on the picture where the water is 5432, and then the red line would be where the 5444, which would be the new reallocated level at Chatfield and what it would affect. There's the project participants in this are kind of broken down into the downstream participants and the upstream participants, and they try to keep a balance between that. Right now, there's the unassigned are it started out with 15 participants, and it's down to 12 participants right now. And there's some unassigned water in there. That 3,561 acre feet of water is unassigned. And then also recently, the Mutual Ditch Company, that water is now part of the unassigned. They have pulled out of the project too. And you see on there the CWCB and the CPW, the 1,000 acre feet. That 1,000 acre feet was originally a parks before we were Parks and Wildlife. And that was a park's 1,000 acre feet. And right now, conceptually, there's an interagency agreement to switch that over, and CWCB will have control over that 1,000 acre feet. And then you have the upstream participants, more of the municipal. The downstream are more of the agricultural side, and the upstream is more municipal and industrial. And you see Centennial Water and Sanitation District is, you know, they hold 31%, and that's divided up. And there's just a little bit of unassigned water in there. So what I'm going to do is go into some of the recreational impacts. I'm going to start out with more of how it's going to impact the facilities around the park. And if you can see on here, this is another picture. It has the level that up here. And we're going to start up here in this north boat ramp area, and then I'm going to just work around the park this way and end up down over here in Plum Creek. The South Platte comes in here, and the Plum Creek drainage is over here. We're just going to break down some of these areas in here. If you look at this total area in here is 587 acres, and that will be the new fluctuation zone. So that's everything that will be impacted around the park. And for Chatfield and with our land acres and stuff, that's significant to lose that type of land acreage around the, you know, around the reservoir, and to be able to try to mitigate for that area. At the north boat ramps, the effects around the north boat ramps is the 54 line will come across. So both ramps will be affected around here, and some of these picnic shelters on the front side. So this whole area will basically have to kind of be redone to get the ramps where they need to be. These two separate ramps here. There is an effect, and I'll talk a little bit later about the 10-year level and the 10-year flood effect that's on here. Currently, our 10-year flood level is 5444, which is the proposed increase. The new level will be 5454, and at that current level would be the high point up in here, which would take this whole area out of commission in a 10-year flood. And currently at the park, if we have a 10-year flood, we can still keep this area open, and we can have the whole west side open, and we'd have their downstream side open, which is actually where there's other activities going on. And as we move down, we have Massey Draw. It's a very popular day area, and this is where all the boaters come along the beach area. And this in here is a parking lot that's a 72-car parking lot. And with our visitation on weekends, this reaches capacity, and this is full almost every weekend. Especially, you know, the busier and the holiday weekends is really full. This whole landmass in here is an area that people use with these trees and everything in here, and then we have a shoreline down in here for boats to pull up, and this comes right out into our power zone area, so it makes a good place for people to come in and picnic and meet their boaters and stuff. This area in here would all be moved back, and it would all be lost in here, so it's another loss of that land area for people to have recreate to picnic in. The other thing to look at is the cottonwood trees that align the area around through here. All these trees would be lost in the reallocation up to a level of 5439. They would take those all out. So we would lose all the shade structures. We'd lose all the shade that people use if they set up their picnics and everything underneath. Now as we move down, we reach into the swim beach area, which has a lot of infrastructure in it, has a lot of impacts in it. The swim beach is down in through here, and these are two big parking lots here. You know, it's over 400 cars that are in here. There's restrooms and shower buildings in here. There's a concession area in there. There's also a first aid station. And when we look at that and where that 54 level comes up to now is this red line that's way back up in here. And we're talking about taking this whole area and we're putting it back up here. And this is our Deer Creek entrance, which is the main entrance into the park. So all this area would be moved up in here. And then we start looking at where all these facilities would be located is 5447. So we're really increasing our distance from our facilities down to the water. And we'll go into that a little bit later on there, too. And the other factor that we started doing is, as we move these facilities around and we're taking away that land, we're starting to concentrate people in more areas that before we could spread out into. Now we're concentrating, so we're going to have a higher impact from those areas where people are going to spend more time. Down in the Catfish Flats area in the Fox Run going down south around the lake, these are group picnic areas that are down in through here. All this whole area will be affected and have to be redone. There's restrooms down in here, and there's a bike trail also that runs all the way down. And this is where we'll start to be seeing some of the effects on the main park road here and up around the Deer Creek entrance, where this whole road will have to be redone. Down on the south side, we have our gravel ponds down here. This is separate from the lake, this is actually part of the lake, the Kingfisher area, and then the lake is back up on the side over here. The 5444 level actually comes all the way up and around this lake. I will tell you that this proposed that this lake will be saved, that gravel pond will be saved, and then this road up here will be where it will be. So the gravel ponds is a very highly used area for our special activities. There's a lot of fishing down in the area. The other thing down in here is this section of stream down here, there's 0.7 miles of stream that would be lost. And this is very popular for stream fishing, especially in the metro area, for people to come out so close to be able to come out and fish in the stream. And in that area down there, the 5440 line would come up and dip through here, so there's 0.7 miles in there that would be lost. This is also an area where most of the mature cottonwood trees are located, and it's also heavily used for wildlife viewing. There's a lot of wildlife corridors that come in through out of here with the edge effect. People, we see a lot of things in the morning and everything that comes through there. And there's been over 300 species of birds that have been identified on Chatfield, so they do get a lot of birders that come out. And then as we move around, getting to the marina, the one place that the reallocation doesn't affect directly is our campgrounds. So our 197 campgrounds and where our park offices are above the level, and those aren't affected by the reallocation. But as we come around to the marina area, this is a major use area. And we have group picnic areas down here. This marina is a 300 site marina that's full every year. There's a south boat ramp is right here. This is a public access, public parking. All through here, we have two group picnic areas, and this whole area up here would be the new line of 5444. So it'd wipe, you'd pretty much have to redo this whole area down here, and you're losing all your protection for the marina. And this is an area that this is a concessionaire, so it has some special circumstances to try to work through. And then if you take this whole area and you talk about that land crunch and we move it back over here, right here is our campgrounds. So then we start having conflicting uses, and we're starting to really concentrate people in those areas. Now as you move around into the Plum Creek area, this is more of a picnic area, and the Army Corps Master Plan is kind of a wildlife area that they keep open on the Plum Creek. There's not a lot of development here. It's mostly trails and stuff. There is a picnic area down here with a restroom. The big thing here is we do get a lot of fishermen, and the lake down here at this new level up here, if we move all this stuff back here, you're really increasing the distance from, here to down to the lower water. And the water that's going to be put in here has relatively junior water rights, and, it's predicted to only fill 2 to 3 times out of 10 years. So it's not like it's going to fill every time. Like right now, we come into the springtime, and we're usually full of 5432. We drop, we have about a 5-foot fluctuation. So it's really increasing that fluctuation, especially on that south side with the shallow water, and really increasing those distances. And then one part of it is they do have some identified borrow pit areas around the park. There's 179 acres that they will use for fill around the park, each one of these little pink areas right in here. And so that's kind of it's additional to the 578 acres. These two pits right here are actually inside, so it's like around 100 acres, total additional. But really looking at those and how those are reallocated, making sure that those are mitigated properly, or that's an even more lost land. Now we'll go kind of into some of the impacts of the users that they'll have that come to the park instead of after the facilities. We talked a little bit about the increased fluctuations, and you can see right now we operate, here's 5427 and here's 5432. That's our normal fluctuation. We can go down to 5423. down here. But during the high use season, this is usually our normal fluctuation. Now we're talking about coming up to 54-44, so we're talking about 17 feet of vertical fluctuation. So that's really increasing that area, that distance between, especially on that south side, for people to access. Our increased distance, especially at the swim beach, when you look at it, right now, if we're down at our low point of 54-23, we're looking at 260 feet from the edge of the water up to the facilities. At 54-44, it would be over 600 feet, and that's just the edge of the facilities, and then the parking lots would be farther back. So, and again, when you look at that, it's if you start getting that huge shoreline along the edge. There's a lot of cottonwoods around the park, and it's projected that the cottonwoods be removed up to 5439. So it has a lot of loss of wildlife habitat, and then the natural shade that everybody uses. There's up to 285 acres of cottonwood trees to be removed. Of that 285, there's about 42 acres of what they call mature cottonwoods, and most of those are in that South Platte area. And on the bottom, you can see the simulation of this is their existing conditions that are today with the trees and the simulation of what it will look like after all the trees are removed and where it will be at in the location from the water. Also, in the southern end of the park, it's a real shallow area. It doesn't climb up out of there, and we're really going to increase our boating hazards in that area. It's not going to increase for our power zone. Our power zone area is really going to stay the same size. The reservoir will increase, but it's going to increase in these shallow areas that aren't going to be usable for power boating. And again, we'll have increased shoreline exposure. Now this level is a 54-23 level, and this is our maximum what we would have. This would double underneath the reallocation. And the problem when we look at with only being able to fill 3 years out of 10 is this becomes, more of the norm of what we see than the rarity that we see. Also, with the increased, we have the cliffs along the south side, these in here, and the campgrounds and our park office set up on top up here. And with the increased water levels, it's going to start eroding on these banks back in here all the way along and all the way up to the South Platte River. And I talked a little bit about the 10-year flood. And with this, obviously, Chatfield is a flood reservoir, and that's what it's for flood storage. Underneath the 10-year flood, we can currently operate and we can stay open. Underneath the reallocation, we would not be able to stay open after a 10-year flood because that water level would come up to our Deer Creek entrance, so the whole west side would be shut down. We would be able to use the east side and people would be able to access campgrounds, but that would cut down everything on the west side and everything down below the dam for access. Okay, I'm going to just briefly talk about some of the financial impacts. As we talked about, this is Chatfield's visitation over the last 10 years, and there's been a lot of up and down on visitation. It doesn't really follow a real good line. But then if we look at the Chatfield revenue, we've had one drop here in 2009, then we slowly climbed back. If we look at about a five-year average, we stay around that $2.1 million every year. So it's been relatively consistently, especially over the last 3 years and with slight climbing. So the financial impact is decreased park revenue, especially during those construction times of, how the construction goes on. It is planned that we would try to stay open during the construction phases, but what will happen, during the construction, will people come out, how many people come out, what is that loss of revenue that we're losing for those visitors that aren't coming? We also will look at an increase in our operational costs due to those more frequent and larger water level fluctuations. So we have more staff time, moving docks and buoys and trash removal within those areas. People only go so far, they only carry their trash so far. They'll have more of a tendency to leave it if they have to carry it very far. Debris removal with the increase in fluctuations will add up. Then we'll have equipment and supplies that would be needed for those areas also. Additional buoys and signs and the vehicles. And then we look at the swim beach and how those fluctuations work and what that does to the sand on our swim beach. It's a very popular area for day use area in that side. We also, with our two concessionaires, we have the Chatfield Marina and the Chatfield Horse Stables. The marina is affected a lot more than the horse stables. They have some major impacts down there. They're going to have to, you know, the whole thing's going to have to be redone down there. How does that affect their business while they're open? They have a lease with the state that goes through 2022 right now, and the Chatfield Horse Stables is actually we're doing a lease right now that we'll be doing. And it just comes down to, you know, if they have lost visitation, it's loss of revenue. It's actually loss of revenue for the park then, too.
Good morning, Commissioner Chairman Singletary, Commission and Director Yamashita. I'm Ken Kamire, the Senior Aquatic Biologist in the Northeast Region. And I'm going to step through some of the fish and wildlife impacts that we'll see at Chatfield, both above the reservoir, in the reservoir, and downstream of the reservoir, that we anticipate. And this will all pertain to the state statute 3760.122.2 that you guys will have to act upon here in the coming months. So these are statutorily sort of covered under that. So the first thing, Chatfield Reservoir is one of the most important walleye fisheries we have in the state because it's one of the three spawning operations that we conduct every year. We manage walleyes in 47 different waters across the state, and all of those eggs are taken at Chatfield, Cherry Creek, and Pueblo. On average, the state takes about 120 million eggs a year, and that stocks those waters. It also makes trades for other species outside the state, and Chatfield provides about a third of those. If you look at it, the spring flows that you see coming out of Chatfield in 2007, because of some anticipated high flows that they were going to have coming into Chatfield later in the year, and that the level the reservoir was at, they evacuated a lot of water out of Chatfield that year. And right at the time that those walleye brood fish were stacking up on the dam, getting ready to spawn, and so they were attracted to that running water leaving the reservoir, and consequently a lot of them left the reservoir with that. The impact of that is seen a couple years later down here in 2009, where we took just right at 5 million walleye eggs when we'd been taking on average about 18 to 20. And during that process, and now you can see with the rebuilding of the walleye population, we're back up in the 25 to 30 million eggs a year there. So those spring flows in March and April are very important to us, and unknowing how the new participants will be operating the reservoir causes some concern there. In addition, smallmouth bass in the reservoir is one of the more popular fisheries. They spawn in the late stages of May or early June. Those fry come off in late June to early July. Depending on the fluctuation of that reservoir at that point in time, we could see some impacts of the spawning and recruitment of smallmouth bass in the reservoir. And currently that's a totally wild fish. We don't stock any smallmouth in there, which would have we may have to go to stocking some smallmouth. In the reservoir, there'll be some changes to water quality. That new reservoir effect is kind of a double-edged sword. In one stance, it's a really nice thing because you're inundating new land. That's all those nutrients are being put into the system. You get a lot more productive system, and you see benefits to the fishery. And initially, we'll see a lot of benefits to some of those fish growing faster, growing bigger, and that sort of thing. The problem is while that's going on, you may have localized areas of dissolved oxygen going on because you have the decomposition of all that vegetation that's being inundated. And as that decomposes, it uses oxygen, not creates oxygen. So you can see some localized changes in oxygen. As Scott said, there's going to be some sediment inputs from erosion and things like that. There's also going to be these nutrient inputs that we talked about with the newly inundated areas that could cause some water changes in nutrients and sediments. There's up above Chatfield Reservoir, there's an area called Cigar Pond, and right now it has Eurasian water milfoil, which is an aquatic nuisance species, and under the new levels of the reservoir, it would be a lot closer and would be within the 10-year floodplain of that particular pond, so we'll have to figure out how to maintain it, not get that ANS species into Chatfield itself. And the last thing is the Front Range of Colorado, on some of our reservoirs or more fluctuating reservoirs, we do have a mercury problem. And this is a study that came out of South Dakota that was looking at some of those prairie potholes, and as they increased in size by surface acres, this is what they saw with the mercury levels on walleyes. if you move to Colorado in 2008, we had a study that went on here in Colorado in Carter, Chatfield, Union, and Horsetooth. And down here, you can see that the fluctuating reservoirs of Carter and Horsetooth are the red and the yellow as far as mercury levels in the walleye. So we're seeing a lot higher mercury levels in those walleyes in those reservoirs due to, in part, to that high fluctuation. On the other hand, Chatfield and Union Reservoir that were relatively low fluctuating reservoirs, you see a relatively low, below the standard of the health department for mercury levels. We anticipate we may see changes in mercury levels in the fish in that system, which may lead to health advisories, and so we need to worry about that. On the terrestrial side of things, as Scott said, there's 587 acres within the inundation zone. There's 42 acres of mature cottonwoods and 159 acres of wetlands habitat that will have to be replaced. That's the home for a lot of different wildlife. It's, as Scott said, recreation is a big part of that. And within this 122.2 process and fish and wildlife, we can consider a lot of those recreations, such as fishing, wildlife viewing, and that sort of thing. So those are things we have to take into consideration. Again, as Scott said, that mature cottonwood population is really important to a lot of species of birds. And a lot of those are migratory, so they pass through, and it's just, you can see them at certain times of the year, and it's a very large birding area. This is the changes as in the inundation area of loss of different types of habitat. So the upland habitat is this mustard-colored yellow. The shrubs are the brown. The mature cottonwood doesn't show up very well, but as Scott says, down here by that pond, you've got a lot of wetlands loss. You've got shoreline changes and that sort of approach. So there's a lot of wildlife habitat. That whole 587 acres is habitat for some sort of wildlife. One of the issues is Preble's meadow jumping mouse. There is critical habitat within the inundation area. There are known populations there. 75 acres of critical habitat on Plum Creek, 80 acres of critical habitat on the South Platte, and 290 acres of not critical habitat or non-critical habitat within that 287 acres. This is the map of that, and you can see this crosshatch area here and here. Those are the critical areas, the critical habitat. That's right along the Plum Creek here and right along the South Platte here with the adjacent riparian areas. And as those get inundated, you'll see the inundation line here and here. You lose a lot of that critical habitat, so that'll need to be replaced. A lot of that will be covered under compensatory mitigation with the Corps of Engineers and the federal government. But it's still part of that consideration that we need to have within our state process. As Scott said, there's a loss of 0.7 mile of stream upstream of the reservoir, so now we've moved upstream of the reservoir. We lose 0.7 mile of the South Platte River, which Scott alluded to is a heavily used area because it's close to the metro area. In the spring of the year, when the walleyes are running on the dam, there's a bunch of walleyes that run up the river too, and there's a huge component of people that come look for that. So we're going to lose 0.7 mile due to inundation. We also lose that inundation on Deer Creek and Plum Creek habitat, that riparian areas that we were looking at earlier. The downstream issues are a little more difficult. We as staff had some difficulty assessing the impacts to these areas because the Corps, in their analysis, didn't necessarily recognize that there'd be any negative impacts downstream. We kind of feel a little different, and a lot of that is due to their analysis based on hydrology, reservoir operations, and water rights. There really wasn't in the draft EIS or in the environmental impact statement, there really hasn't been a reservoir operations plan that we could really know how the participants were going to put water in and take water out. And it's difficult for them because they understand they're only going to get water on a 3 out of 10 year basis to fill the area up. So we realize it's difficult for them, but for our mitigation and impact analysis, we really needed a better operation. We need a better operation plan. The water rights is, as Scott alluded to, a lot of these water rights that are being utilized in Chatfield are junior in nature. They all the participants have other senior rights that have Chatfield as another point of storage that they could utilize. But the other thing that we have to consider is there's still a very large amount of that water that's unassigned right now. So as other participants come in, they may bring in more senior water rights, and all of a sudden that would change the impact of this current analysis. So we, without that known of who's going to be storing what in there, it's very difficult for us to assess impacts. The hydrology, and I'll get into that a little bit more, there's an increased number of zero flow days. There's already a bunch of zero flow days going on with Denver Water's ability to store water and move water in Chatfield. And water quality downstream, that's being handled in some respects by the Corps. And then we have the Chatfield planning base, a fish hatchery that sits right at the base of the dam. And it's real important for us from the standpoint of movement of fish along the Front Range. It also could play a part in hatchery expansion as Ray and our warm water hatcheries start to lose water on the Eastern Plains. The Corps' analysis of hydrology we felt was a little difficult to understand because they used the Denver gauge and the Henderson gauge, and Chatfield sits here. So you had a stream mileage down to there that actually added Cherry Creek, Bear Creek, and Metro wastewater in there, so there was a large inputs to that system before they started doing hydrologic analysis. So we felt like there was a lot of impacts that may have been overlooked. There is a gauge right here at the base of Chatfield that we were able to, along with the participants, to utilize to look at some different options in this system. What we see is zero flow days currently, as I said, currently happen without any reallocation, somewhere from 1 to 160 days a year, somewhere in the neighborhood of 68 days a year on average. If you utilize the 1987 to 2010 Chatfield gauge, reallocation could increase potentially the number of zero flow days or less than one CFS by, on average, 70 days a year. So, and that would vary from 0 to 177. So we are looking at an additional number of zero flow days in the South Platte system below the reservoir, which a lot of people are starting to understand is an up-and-coming fishery. We're having a lot more access of people wanting to fish on that South Platte stretch. The water quality and downstream, obviously, a lot of times the fresh water coming out of Chatfield is that dilution for treated effluent that's coming out of the municipalities there with Metro and Centennial. And within the FEIS, the Corps acknowledged some downstream, they proposed some bypass flows. Our concern is those two are, they proposed like a tenth of a CFS in January. That's virtually we don't know how you're going to measure that. So it's going to be a difficult understanding how that will have an impact. And then currently, if we only use junior water rights that are proposed there shouldn't be any impacts to our Chatfield planning base. We have a 1980 water right that runs water through that planning base during most of the summer, and currently the participants are using a 1983 right as their oldest right, so there shouldn't be a huge amount of impact there unless we get different water rights. So what are the next steps in the process? So that's kind of the impacts that we have been talking with the group about. But over the last year, Scott Roush, myself, and Pete Konovitz, one of our staff hydrologists, have been meeting with the participants on a fairly regular basis to help assist them in kind of negotiating how we could mitigate a lot of these impacts, or at least minimize these impacts. So that'll continue to go on. In November, when you guys come back together in November, the reallocation participants are planning on presenting that plan to you folks on how they plan on mitigating the impacts of this project. That really starts that 60-day review that you guys are held to statutorily in 3760.122.2. In December of 2013, I anticipate that we as a staff will give you some review and feedback on the plan where we see that where it's adequate, reasonable, where we see that there could be potentially we could make some progress and things. And then a lot of work will happen between December of 2013 and the January 2014, because in January of 2014 you'll have to act upon that plan and either approve or disapprove and send it on to the Colorado Water Conservation Board. So with that, if there are any questions of Scott and I, we'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions? Commissioner Pribble.
Thanks, both you and Scott, for that extensive briefing. We've been tracking this from, I think, ever since Bill Kane and I came to the Parks Board. It's been that long process. Will the mitigation plans presented by the water providers and the Corps include not only the structural or the infrastructure that needs to be moved or replaced, but also mitigation for loss of habitat, replanting trees, et cetera,
please, Scott, add in to your any time. We anticipate that the plan that they bring forward will cover everything that we talked about today in this process. Those are the impacts we've been discussing with them. So you will see a recreation mitigation plan, a financial mitigation plan. The only one that statutorily they have to present is the fish and wildlife mitigation. So, but you will see the plans for all of those different impacts.
Thank you. So this may be a question as much for Councilor Monahan. What leverage, if any, do we have with respect to any of the mitigation?
Well, there's significant leverage in the federal scheme of things because the Bureau of Reclamation, the Corps of Engineers, will be interested in mitigating the impacts to the project. They typically don't approve projects without mitigation, so there's going to be mitigation that will be required likely as part of the federal permit. Also, as part of the state process, we do have leverage to negotiate what we believe to be the appropriate state mitigation for fish and wildlife, and there's established state process that then creates the official state position, which is then sent to the Corps of Engineers as well for consideration as part of their process. But typically all participants on projects like this want to address the impacts that are occurring because of their project, because frankly they want it to be publicly accepted and approved and get to move forward on it.
Anything else? Thank you, guys. I'm sure we'll be hearing from you frequently here. Okay, we'll have a short break.